like 90 million adults in the United States have high cholesterol. It's super prevalent, but the resources for it are just garbage.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, don't eat fried foods. Don't eat red meat. And like, don't put butter on everything.
Oh, yeah.
Generic.
Right.
And, you know, for so many people, yeah, they don't eat fried foods for every meal. They maybe only eat red meat once a week already. And, you know, they're not putting a pound of butter on their broccoli every night.
Right.
And that was kind of the resources or support, I guess, support in quotes that people would get from their doctors about, you know, what they could try and do.
Right.
Or I'd get plenty of women that were in smaller bodies saying that my doctor told me I have to go on a statin because I don't have enough weight to lose to lower my cholesterol without medication.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Which is just such
like a PCOS,
mind F.
You're listening to the Imperfect PCOS podcast, where we share no BS, science-backed strategies to put your PCOS into remission. I'm your host, Corey Ruth, aka the Women's Dietitian. Let's get into it.
Okay, we are back with another episode of the Imperfect PCOS podcast. Today, we are joined by my colleague and actually a friend of mine, and we'll talk briefly about that too, from back in the day, Ashley Reaver, a fellow dietitian who specializes in high cholesterol. Welcome, Ashley. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Corey.
Please tell listeners how we met initially.
Facebook group. For California dietitians, and we were going to split a motivational interviewing class like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And then we realized we lived like a mile apart. And we're like, yes. Maybe we should meet.
Yes. So cool. I met Ashley when I was living in the Bay Area, and I had literally was just starting to think about going into private practice. And it was so cool to meet somebody who was kind of in that same zone and bounce ideas off of her. It feels like a lifetime ago, honestly. I mean, so much has transpired in both of our lives since then. So it's so cool to be able to reconnect.
Absolutely. And we both have done well with our practices, with what we were doing as dietitians. So it's really cool to think back to when we were both like kind of scared and
what the hell is this
we should be doing? Yeah. I need all education possible because I don't have the confidence yet.
Oh my gosh, totally. Definitely. And I feel like we've all been there at some point. Where are you living still in the Bay Area now?
Yeah, we're in South Bay.
Okay, got it.
We've moved in opposite directions of each other.
Yes, I know. I've gone north, very north.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I still teach at UC Berkeley. So I'm still there 2 or 3 days a week.
Okay, so you're commuting up there. Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my, I know that commute. Okay. No, that's a long time. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot. Awesome. Well, tell us how you got into this specific field. It's definitely such a needed space to work in as far as dietetics go. Tell us a little bit about your journey, how you got into this field.
Into dietitian or dietetic nutrition?
Yeah, let's start there. And then I want to go into the niche that you have created for yourself, which is so incredible.
Yeah. So I have always loved food. I'm from a massive family. I only have one sister, but my dad's one of 9 and his mom's one of 20. And they, 20 kids.
Oh my gosh.
All single births.
Wow.
Wild.
Wow.
They all like live very close to my hometown, which is a very small hometown.
Awesome.
So just like massive family gatherings with mass food production has just always been like my jam.
Cool. Yes.
And then when I went to college, I was originally pre-med. I wanted to be a pediatrician. And where I went to college, they picked your courses freshman year. And one of the ones that they made me take was Introduction to Nutrition. And I changed my major 2 weeks later. I had no idea that like you could work with food as a career, you know, outside of like being a chef.
Right.
And it was just like, I was still pre-med, but I thought as a pediatrician, like parents would much rather me be able to tell them what to feed their kids versus like, this is the, you know, what the cells in your child's body is doing. Cause I was a bio major.
Yes.
And then as a nutrition major, my sophomore year, I had to take some sort of class, maybe nutrition and the life cycle. And that's when I learned what a dietitian was. So even as a nutrition major, I had no idea that there was, you know, this field of being able just to work with people on their nutrition.
Once I
learned what that was, swapped into that being my career path. And then I've done all sorts of cool things, very different things, which is one thing I just love about being a dietitian. There's so many different avenues of what you can do.
So true.
And yeah. I just love it. It's like a perfect marriage of a teacher and a nurse that also talks about food and poop all day. Just like
So true. I feel like that's so, such a common thing to hear. So many dietitians start out pre-med or thinking that, you know, they want to go into, you know, become physicians, myself included, and then kind of pivot realizing, I kind of want to be on the preventative side of this whole, you know, we start to really see and understand what our healthcare system looks like in detail. Tell us about getting into the cholesterol space. How did you decide to pivot? Because you were working kind of more generalized nutrition, correct me if I'm wrong, when we first met, and then you really like switched gears. And I was so excited to see that because, like I said, it's just so needed.
Yeah. So I think, you know, as a, in my private practice, accepting insurance in the Bay Area, even though there's millions of people that live here, there's very few dietitians that actually accepted insurance. So I kept it pretty general so I could help as many people as possible. But with a general practice, I saw so many women in particular that would show up with elevated levels of cholesterol that just kind of came out of nowhere. And, you know, for a lot of people, the thought about cholesterol is that it's a, you know, an old man disease. This guy sits on the couch, eats chips and drinks beer, has high cholesterol, and gets on a, you know, a statin, a cholesterol lowering medication in the 60s. And that's the only person that gets impacted with high cholesterol. So it's, you know, it was kind of a lot of like fear and shame when women would come to me and like feel like they had to whisper that they had high cholesterol, when in reality, just as many women as men have high cholesterol.
Is that right? Okay. Wow.
And I'm not quite sure why it has to be so hush hush for women.
So true.
It's something that impacts so many people, like 90 million adults in the United States have high cholesterol. It's super prevalent, but the resources for it are just garbage.
Yes.
You know, don't eat fried foods. Don't eat red meat. Avoid and like, processed don't put butter on everything. Generic.
Right.
And, you know, for so many people, they don't eat fried foods for every meal. They maybe only eat red meat once a week already. And, you know, they're not putting a pound of butter on their broccoli every night. And that was kind of the resources or support, I guess, support in quotes that people would get from their doctors about, you know, what they could try and do. Or I'd get plenty of women that were in smaller bodies saying that my doctor told me I have to go on a statin because I don't have enough weight to lose to lower my cholesterol without medication.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Which is just such like a PCOS, mind F. I had a lot of experience with clients coming to me working with cholesterol. And then it kind of like came to a head in 2020. I teach nutrition classes at UC Berkeley. In summer of 2020, I was teaching our introduction to nutrition course, and we covered lipids. Instruction was all online. And in that like lipid lecture, I talked about what cholesterol is, where it comes from, things that can influence why some people have higher levels than others, even if they eat the same diet. But then specifically the lifestyle things that you can work on. And one student showed it to a parent, and I got an email from that parent saying like, thank you so much. I've been on statins for 10 years and I've never gotten this information. And then I just had like a light bulb moment of like, okay, online education, we've been forced to do it, but like, we know it works. This information is wasted on 18 and 19 year olds that have like, are not going to remember when they have high cholesterol, maybe in their 40s, anything about what we talk about. And there was so nothing out there. No one was focusing on cholesterol. So it was a like supernatural pivot. And I'm so glad I did, because the, you know, it's been a super successful program. Course members have had a lot of great success, but also there's been such like a need for it, and just creating community around that I think has also been really helpful since, again, for women in particular, it's something that they haven't, you know, why am I the only woman that has this, which isn't the case. So it's been nice for them to be able to communicate, I think, with other people experiencing the same thing.
Definitely. Yeah. Just that community aspect alone, I find can be so crucial to somebody's health journey, honestly. I mean, all of us. I want to start with defining what high cholesterol is. And I also want to cover, what are some of the causes, if any, do we know, you know, behind this? And well, let's start there, because I don't want to overwhelm you. I have like so many questions, but we'll start with those two, you know, kind of definition and what are some potential causes?
Sure. So cholesterol is just a type of fat that we have in our body. Three primary types of fat. We have triglycerides, which are 95% of the foods we eat, as well as 95% of the weight of fats in our own body, how we store them.
Okay.
Are in the form of triglycerides. We have something called phospholipids, and then we have cholesterol. And cholesterol is something that is required for human beings. I think that's misconception number one, is that you need it. It's not all cholesterol bad. Is not bad.
Right.
It is the basis for so much in our body. It's in every single cell in our body. Mm-hmm. We need it for production of sex hormones, our stress hormones, vitamin D. Right. And it also produces a digestive compound that we need to be able to break down and absorb fats that we eat, called bile. We'll probably come back to that a little bit later.
Okay.
So it's just a type of fat that's a precursor for all sorts of stuff in the body. But we typically get tested on a lipid panel. If you were to go to your doctor and get that LDL or HDL, total cholesterol tested, as lipoproteins is really what they're testing.
Okay.
So LDL stands for low density lipoprotein.
Okay.
Just think about
a lot of acronyms, peeps.
Fats floating around in water, they separate, they rise to the top. So if you make salad dressing at home, the same thing would happen if you had just free floating cholesterol in your bloodstream. It would just like kind of rise to
just
the top,
there.
Stick there, clump together.
Okay.
It wouldn't be able to move around and go to literally every single cell in our body that needs cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
So our body packages it into these little lipoproteins. And then what gets measured on that lipid panel is they look at those lipoproteins. In particular, they try and measure the cholesterol within them. As far as what cholesterol could do, if you have too much cholesterol in your system, or really it's too much of a particular compound on cholesterol for too long, it can really start to get underneath the lining of your arteries. The intima is what that's called, and that can cause damage to your arteries, and your body's going to try and fix that. So through a series of steps and pathways, ultimately basically some white blood cells can die there trying to fix that. Then they start to accumulate, they can get calcified, and that's what causes that plaque that maybe we hear about, atherosclerosis, that thinning of the arteries. And you know, cholesterol has to be present for that atherosclerotic plaque to build, but it's not the only factor that's there. You can't do it without cholesterol, but it's cholesterol plus other things that make that plaque start to develop.
I see. Okay, so it's kind of like it's necessary. But and what does that, what can that lead to?
So if it ultimately fills the artery, you can have a blockage that's there. So if you've heard of anyone that's had, you know, triple bypass surgery or quadruple bypass surgery, that's because they have to go around that blood vessel that's now been completely blocked. Blood can't get to the heart. If that blockage breaks off, it can also travel other places. So that, you know, blockage could travel into smaller blood vessels in the brain that can prevent blood from getting up there, and that can cause a stroke. So when you hear about heart disease, typically it's in relation to preventing heart attacks or preventing strokes, preventing that blockage of blood flow.
Got it. Okay. Thank you for defining that.
There's no way around it. PCOS is complex and multifaceted. What we know about it, including how best to treat it, is constantly changing. That's why I've dedicated my life's work to helping women put their PCOS into remission. Inside my signature program, the PCOS Boss Academy, women lose weight permanently without restriction and master their most stubborn PCOS symptoms. If you're looking to get pregnant or want to be a mom in the future, my ultra-successful Get Pregnant with PCOS program supports moms-to-be every step of the way in conquering PCOS symptoms and bringing home the baby of their dreams. Plus, there's an additional weight loss mode to check into. These are all of the science-backed nutrition and lifestyle tweaks you need to improve your PCOS and change your life from a qualified healthcare provider and leading PCOS expert in the field. Ultimately, we are in control of our PCOS, and I would love to work with you inside one of my upcoming programs so you can step into the best version of yourself and start feeling like you again.
And what about, what are causes? Like, why would somebody suddenly have high cholesterol when they maybe didn't before? Or we can talk about risk factors too.
Sure. So genetics definitely can play a role.
Yes.
Typically for genetics though, and this is something that I hear a lot and something that I have tried really hard to dispel, is just because you have other people in your family that have high cholesterol does not mean that you are genetically predisposed to have high cholesterol.
Okay. Interesting.
So
a lot of us think that.
Sure. There's certain, you know, maybe some of us are much more sensitive to certain nutrients, but I think, you know, a lot of times we forget that in your family, you inherit a lot more than just your genes. You're also inheriting foods that you eat all the time, foods that are weird and you just never see on your plate. how you celebrate, maybe what normal activity looks like. So if you have a sibling or an aunt or an uncle that also have high cholesterol, it doesn't mean that there's nothing you can do about it because it's in your genes and you're going to have it. So that's a big thing that I like to just put out there, that your family history is so much more than your genetics, and it doesn't mean it's out of your control.
So true. That's so empowering. I think that's such an important piece to this.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, and so much related to your health feels, I certainly suffer from anxiety, and health anxiety is a very real thing, and trying to hone in as much as possible on the things that you have control over versus things that you're never going to be able to change is an empowering way, in my opinion, to approach your health. Stop stressing out about that one factor that is never going to change and you can't impact it. Instead, think about all of this stuff that you can intentionally decide to do every single day that can move the needle.
Right, right. And what better place to start than the delicious food on our plates?
Exactly. So that family history is a piece. Genetics, some people, there is genetically high cholesterol called familial hypercholesterolemia that impacts about 5%, or excuse me, about 10% of people that have high cholesterol. So 10% of the 90 million adults in the United States have this genetically high cholesterol. And typically that's an issue of either your body not getting the feedback of, hey, I've made enough cholesterol, stop producing it, or our cells in our body not being able to remove it from our circulation enough.
Okay, got it.
And importantly, that is 10%. So 90% of people, while there might be small genetic variations, they don't have this condition that no matter what you do, you have high cholesterol.
Right.
And the people that do have that, they typically have high cholesterol when they're 16, 18, 21. The very first time they get their cholesterol tested, it would be high.
Interesting.
For a lot of other people, it comes later in life. And that could be lifestyle factors certainly have an impact. Menopause can increase your cholesterol levels. But also, you know, I think for a lot of people, you're no longer maybe as active. Your food choices are shifting as your schedule is much more constrained, taking care of other human beings.
Amen.
And lifestyle definitely can play a big role in that.
Okay. What are some risk factors for elevated cholesterol?
I don't know if there's necessarily risk factors that are like a blanket, like certainly as you get older, your risk factor increases. Maybe if you have you know, genetically high, if you have family members that maybe are on statins potentially, but certain types of diets tend to impact some people much more than others. And activity for sure can play a role in that as well. You can talk about body fat percentage, but I'd prefer to think about it as the amount of lean muscle that you have in your body. If you have less lean muscle, your cholesterol levels could certainly be elevated.
Okay. Got it. Good to know. So I want to talk about, you know, PCOS and high cholesterol, because a lot of patients, clients, program members who I work with tell me, you know, come to me saying, oh my gosh, I got my labs done and I've never had high cholesterol. Like, what is this? The doctor said I had cholesterol. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, let me look into it. So it's quite common, but I want to dispel the myth that PCOS causes high cholesterol, because we can often see them together, but that's likely due to some of the other factors that we just talked about. It's not PCOS doesn't cause high cholesterol. Although we can, and I love if you would talk about the insulin connection, because of course we have to bring insulin into the conversation. Sure. It's in every convo here. You know, in terms of PCOS, insulin, and cholesterol, is there a connection potentially there?
Yeah, two things. I think one thing I should have said before is where cholesterol comes from. Your body makes cholesterol from anything that can contribute energy. So proteins, carbohydrates, fat, or alcohol all get broken down into this compound called acetyl-CoA that our cells can either use to create energy or we can use for cholesterol production. So excess intake of energy over what your body can realistically use, you're going to have an excess of this acetyl-CoA. One of the things your body can do with it is create cholesterol. And oftentimes that's one reason why we can see if there's weight gain that's happening, an elevation in cholesterol can go hand in hand with that, because there's a surplus of energy.
Right.
Your body's got to do something with it. One of those things is creating cholesterol.
Got it.
For insulin in particular, you know, insulin is, insulin resistance is certainly something that happens often in PCOS. Yes. And that what insulin does in our body is so much stuff. You know, it's an anabolic hormone. It's something that supports growth. And cholesterol is also something that supports growth. Anytime you're in a growth phase, your body's using a lot more of that cholesterol. So if your insulin levels are higher, that can also be something that definitely supports more levels of cholesterol being produced in your body. Okay. The flip side of that, insulin helps to inhibit certain things that could help us break down cholesterol and be able to utilize that.
Yes.
So if insulin is high, we're also inhibiting those processes that would otherwise help us reduce the amount of cholesterol that we have. If you think about breaking down fat in the body, which is something that during normal metabolic times only happens really when we're underfed, our body would be breaking down excess fat to be able to use it as energy.
Right.
That can result in a lot of additional triglycerides in our bloodstream, can cause, again, a lot more of those particles that have ApoB is what it's called, that potentially artery damaging aspect that we find on LDL, which is how we measure LDL.
Okay.
So the connection is not necessarily that insulin automatically results in elevated cholesterol, but insulin interferes with processes that either can increase insulin, or excuse me, increase cholesterol's usage, or can increase the release of certain, things like triglycerides that can have an impact on that lipid panel.
Fascinating. Okay. So that's why we can see that, you know, potential connection, but yes, it doesn't automatically mean you're going to have high cholesterol if you have PCOS. Okay.
Yeah.
What if we, you mentioned this before, but I just want to go over this like a little boom, boom, boom list. If we are interested in getting our, well, first of all, let me back up. How would we know what, is there any outward symptoms of high cholesterol?
Not really.
We have to, you have to get tested.
Yeah. You can't stand on a scale or look in the mirror or look at your skin, whatever, to see it. For some people. For some people, if your cholesterol level is incredibly high, you might start to see some in your eye. But at that point, I strongly, strongly hope that you had tested. Someone has noticed some point in your life to test you earlier.
What do you mean in your eye? Sorry, what does that mean?
So it can start to like deposit around your eye, fatty deposits of cholesterol.
Interesting.
And people, again, with extremely high levels might see deposits of like stuff on their skin. But
because it has to go
somewhere.
Those
are things that we saw with genetically high cholesterol before they necessarily knew what that was.
They're
super rare. Very rare.
Yeah.
So getting your blood tested is how you gotta do it.
Okay, got it. So you have to get this testing. And that's why it's so great to get labs done regularly, once a year, if you can, which is typically covered by insurance. So what lab tests are we going to ask for if we want to, and this might be included already, but not always. Sometimes we really have to advocate for, you know, ourselves in a medical setting as far as what specific testing we want done. What are the tests that we would ask for?
So most of what insurance covers is just a basic lipid panel, which is okay. It's not bad. And in that lipid panel, you usually have your total cholesterol, just not so important, but you also would have your LDL, HDL. Sometimes they'll test non-HDL cholesterol, and then usually have your triglycerides in there as well. That non-HDL cholesterol is a really good measure because it shows how many compounds have this protein on them called apolipoB. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of, I think, where most preventative research is going, is looking at how much apoB you have, because that's the type of compound that can really be the most atherogenic. And you don't just find it on LDL, even though of all of the types of lipoproteins in our body, LDL is where the majority of that ApoB is. But some people might have it on precursor to LDL called VLDL that sometimes is included in that panel. Sometimes it's not. There's another marker called lipoprotein little a, LPA is how it's often viewed.
Okay.
And that lipoprotein is not something that's tested. It's like a relatively newer one that's being tested for people that have a family history of very early cardiovascular events. So, a parent that has a heart attack in their 40s, they would test this LP little a, because that also has a lot of this ApoB on it. So if a normal lipid panel, I don't want to ever say is bad, because we still have a really strong correlation to LDL levels and incidence of heart disease. And decreasing LDL levels is the best treatment that we really have for preventing cardiovascular events in the future. Okay. That non-HDL that you sometimes see on there is technically a more specific measurement than just LDL. But what those two things are like trying to get us a proxy of is this ApoB. So any particle that has this ApoB on it is the type that could be somewhat potentially dangerous. And you can get ApoB tested. It's new. The likelihood that your insurance would cover it unknown because it's not technically part of clinical guidelines. I think absolutely it'll get there, but it's going to take years and years to get the committee to redo the guidelines, but then insurance is going to take an extra year or who knows, multiple years to accept everything. But you can pay for that out of pocket. So like if you're getting a hard time getting it from your doctor and they order it for you, your insurance might charge you $100 for it versus you could go into a Quest and ask for it and get it for maybe $25.
Hot tip.
So action item to do if it's something that you're concerned about. Again, it doesn't mean LDL is bad. Right. We're testing LDL. We're probably going to get a big, you know, the thing that has the most of this potential ApoB on it. If you have elevated LDL, there's a pretty strong likelihood you're going to have elevated ApoB. But if you have normal LDL, we might be missing a high ApoB that we're not picking up because we haven't tested the LDL, or maybe your test doesn't have this non-HDL cholesterol. I mean, it's certainly not picking up that other lipoprotein A. So if you can, ApoB would be ideal.
That's okay. That's really good to know. I really hope that our testing becomes more comprehensive because I think, you know, the more data we have, the better. Why not? If it's out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. And
yeah. And I would say too, just having high cholesterol is important to note. That doesn't mean that you're going to have a heart attack.
Right.
Unfortunately, a symptom for a lot of people of the first sign that they have high cholesterol perhaps is a heart attack. Hopefully, again, this is why you take some of those preventative steps beforehand.
Yes.
But, you know, that cholesterol is there. I always like to think about it as like the match. But what really strikes that match is inflammation in your body and some things that we know can cause inflammation.
Yes.
Number one, biggest cause of inflammation is smoking. If you are smoking, please stop. And unfortunately, this is any type of smoke.
Right.
Of course, we have a lot of research on cigarette smoke. We don't have very much research on smoking marijuana since it's relatively new in the legal things, as well as vaping.
Yes.
However, it's probably a pretty safe assumption that even if it's not nicotine or tobacco, ingesting hot things into your lungs is probably causing some damage. And that damage doesn't just stay in your lungs.
Yes.
We know that high blood pressure can also increase the risk. Insulin resistance is something that can increase the risk. Excess body fat, in particular, that visceral body fat can also be something that increases that risk just because it introduces inflammation. It can make that process really accelerate.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of right around your vital organs.
Yep.
Okay. If somebody gets a diagnosis of high cholesterol, what is the typical treatment protocol that they're offered in kind of a conventional medical setting? And how do you feel about that?
I think it varies. I have absolutely worked with so many people because they go to the doctors. They get their blood work done after their doctor's appointment. So why we don't do blood work before your doctor's appointment so then you can talk to your doctor about those results.
That's so true. I've literally never thought about that. Duh. Wow.
So they go to the doctors, outward symptoms appear fine. They get a blood test. And then before they even get a phone call to review the results of their blood test, they get a phone call from their pharmacy. Their doctor is called in a step. This prescription, which is, you know, three or four of the top 10 drugs sold in the United States are statins.
Wow.
But it's very common to have high cholesterol be prescribed medication.
Yes.
So I get a lot of proactive patients being like, you know, they didn't even tell me about what cholesterol was. They didn't necessarily review my results, but I'm getting this call from the pharmacy that I have a prescription to pick up.
Wow.
And of course, that rubs some people the wrong way. Other people are just like, okay, my doctor said that I need this, which I'm not necessarily saying is bad.
Totally.
Other times people might be like, okay, can you give me 3 months to work on it? And your doctor would be willing to say, all right, let's check this again in 3 months and see if you've been able to make improvements. Other times you might also, depending on your level, doctors might say, well, let's just watch it and see what happens.
Okay.
And that's the one that really irks me a lot, because if you just watch this, you're just going to watch it increase. If you don't take action to change something, it's not going to be a surprise when the next time you go back to the doctor's office. And now you are in the range where medication is something that should be recommended.
Right.
So I would love if instead of let's watch this, because it's been slowly creeping up over years, if there was some sort of conversation of, you know, it hasn't always been elevated. So maybe, you know, try out an intervention. Please talk to a dietitian.
Yes.
Or just suggestion of lifestyle interventions can be something that could change this level and stop this upward trajectory. That would be my ideal.
I mean, that makes perfect sense, Ashley.
Yeah.
I don't know. Crazy.
Of giving someone a little bit of support or hope. that they can have an impact on their own health. Things aren't just happening to them. But again, you know, I've also heard from plenty of course members that say, my doctor said I don't have enough weight to lose, so he gave me a statin because I'm not going to be able to do it with just diet and lifestyle. And your body weight is not what determines your cholesterol level.
Right.
So, you know, you could lose weight and your cholesterol levels could skyrocket because the nutrients that you're taking in aren't ones that necessarily support healthy cholesterol levels. Yeah. Or you could lose weight and your cholesterol doesn't budge whatsoever.
Right.
And I think that that's a big frustration for a lot of people is, you know, I did what my doctor said, I lost 15 pounds and my cholesterol went up or my cholesterol didn't move. And then that sets in the feeling of, there's nothing that I can do. I have to take this medication. There's things that you can do. It's just you weren't doing the right things, unfortunately.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And are there, do statins have side effects? Why? I'm not super familiar with that medication.
They can for some people.
Okay.
I would definitely not say that they're an unsafe drug, but there are definitely people that report having muscle pain, like a lot of cramps that can happen. It can increase your risk of developing type 2 diabetes really slightly. And again, only in really specific people.
Okay.
But there's absolutely a group of people that have tried statins and cannot take them. It just causes a lot of pain. We do have other options for medication. But, you know, there's also a big group of people that don't want to take any medications.
Right.
Mentally, a lot of people feel like it's a failure if they have to go on statins. And I always just like to tell people, if that's the case, you're super fortunate that we have a medical option to help with this, because there are so many conditions that we have no medical treatment for.
Yes.
And be thankful. Statins are, you know, really, really effective.
Right.
However, I wish that more people would try and do it with the right interventions and with encouragement to try the right interventions before thinking that they have to go on this medication. That is a lifelong medication.
Right.
You'll have to stay on it.
Feel the exact same way about metformin and PCOS. So in terms of alternative treatments and interventions, how do you work with clients to shift these numbers for them, shift these levels for them, get them out of the danger zone?
Yeah.
What are some things that you do in your practice that you recommend if somebody is saying, hey, you know, I don't want to take a statin or, you know, a drug, or maybe I want to wait and see and try to do this on my own? What can they do?
So I offer a course that really walks people through how to identify sources of specific nutrients that are maybe they're in excess or are lacking in their diet. In that course, the first phase of it is just talking about what cholesterol is, dispelling myths about cholesterol, talking about where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, for a lot of people, that there's no conversation about what cholesterol is. And if you go on, you know, TikTok or Instagram, it's a dumpster fire. And unfortunately, that is where most people get their information.
Yes.
So not all cholesterol is bad. We need cholesterol, but we don't need it in excess. We do not need to eat it. Our body produces all that we need. So that phase one is kind of just in clearing up things that you may have heard or maybe have never heard about what cholesterol is and what it does in your body.
Nice.
And then phase two, we talk about some specific nutrients to focus on. So there's one to focus on getting more, one to try and monitor how much you're taking in, and then one that really doesn't matter that gets way too much attention in the media.
Is it eggs?
Yes, cholesterol, dietary cholesterol, which eggs are high in, as are shellfish.
Yes.
But dietary cholesterol has a very, very, very small impact on our cholesterol.
Mind blown. Yeah.
It's not like we eat an egg and then automatically all of that cholesterol gets absorbed into our bloodstream and has the impact of cholesterol that we would produce ourselves on our body.
I just picture like an egg, like just heading towards the heart, just like da 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 da, and just like getting like sucked into an artery.
But
do you get asked about eggs every day? Do you get asked
every
about eggs
every
day?
Every time I post a picture in my stories of I've had eggs today, there's just so much. And I'm like, you should take my course because you're wasting your energy on something that doesn't matter.
Right.
So that dietary cholesterol really has a pretty tiny impact. And I feel like it's every like 5 years it comes up in the media of, you know, one very tiny study did something. And then it's, you know, on the front page of Time Magazine again, everyone's freaking out. But the, you know, dietary guidelines for Americans, they removed cholesterol as something that Americans need to focus on.
Oh, Lordy Lord. It's good.
Yeah. And you know, that's because it's not necessarily what has the biggest impact on your cholesterol levels. You can still find it on food labels. I'm sure it's coming that they might take that off. But, you know, also cholesterol is something you can only get from animal products.
Yes.
So that's another myth that comes up a lot is I thought I couldn't eat this because it had cholesterol. Well, if it's not from an animal, it's going to have zero cholesterol, which is another thing that comes up. So dietary cholesterol, like people go, you know, over invest so much energy in avoiding eggs, which are a great source of lean protein, as well as shrimp, great source of lean protein, because they're trying to restrict to this nutrient that doesn't necessarily have that much of an impact. Another thing to focus on adding is soluble fiber. Soluble fiber is the type of fiber that swells when it comes into contact with water. So a great way I like to explain that is visualizing putting oats, chia seeds, beans in a cup of water overnight. They look different. Broccoli and celery, great sources of fiber, but a different type of fiber, this insoluble fiber.
Right.
If you put broccoli and celery in water overnight, they look like broccoli and celery in the morning. And that's because they don't have the soluble fiber. That soluble fiber is so important because it can actually impact our utilization of cholesterol in our body. As I talked about before, you know, we need cholesterol for the structural integrity of our cells. There's nothing that I can do mentally or like intentionally to increase the structural integrity of my cells. I don't influence that process.
Right.
The production of sex hormones or stress hormones, for the most part, you know, I'm not going to influence, I'm not going to be like, yes, I really want to increase my testosterone and therefore my cholesterol levels are going to go down. Because more cholesterol is being used to make those.
That's true. Yeah.
Your bile, that thing, that digestive compound, is something that we can influence. So our body excretes bile when we eat meals that have fat in them. Bile, we're super efficient at recycling it. About 97 to 98% of that bile, once it's used, gets recycled and waits for us either later in that meal or for the next meal. If you have a diet that has really high amounts of soluble fiber in it, it can trap that bile and transport it out of the body. It leaves the body, but we need to be able to digest fat. So our body's going to pull on our cholesterol stores to be able to produce more of that bile. And that process is really the only thing that we can do to influence the amount of cholesterol our body is going to utilize. So for individuals that aren't eating enough fiber in general, but in particular enough of the soluble fiber, we're kind of missing out on this really big pathway, like one of the only pathways that we have to be able to remove excess cholesterol from our body.
Wow. And many of us don't get enough fiber.
Yep. And I often feel like, you know, a lot of people that are trying to diet, which, you know, most women fall into the category of trying to do something to manipulate their weight. You know, it's often cut out every single type of carbohydrate, which doesn't last for very long, but carbohydrates are where you find fiber. It's a type of carbohydrate. So if you intentionally are removing the best sources of soluble fiber from your diet without thinking, I'm trying to get more soluble fiber in, and seeing those cholesterol levels increase is something that's really, really common.
Oh, yeah, totally. I wonder, you know, if they've done studies on, you know, I'm sure you know this, but like the keto diet and back in the day, the Atkins diet, the carnivore diet, you know, what happens with cholesterol when
the amount of people, and this is another thing that bugs me a bit. Let me just go in for this. Is so many people try the keto diet.
Yeah.
And then they have their yearly physical while they're in this diet or right after they've done it.
Right.
Their cholesterol has skyrocketed and they get prescribed a stat. If the doctor had asked them, have you made any recent changes to your diet that could have resulted in this? And they say keto, that should be like a big red flag. Stop doing that diet and let's see if these levels come back down before I prescribe you a medication that you're going to stay on for the rest of your life.
Right.
One of my very first in-person clients, she came to me because her cholesterol was high. Her dad had had a heart attack pretty early. So she was really concerned about it. I asked her about her diet. She was doing a keto diet. I said, okay, in 3 months, let's just change your diet and see what happens. Her cholesterol came down from 250 to 125, which is like one of the lowest cholesterols I've ever seen. But her doctor had prescribed her that statin. He was, you know, again, there was a strong family history there. Doctors don't want you to die. That's what they're trying to do.
Totally.
But she did not need, like, it almost makes me nervous to think about how low her cholesterol would be when she stopped keto and was taking a statin.
Oh yeah. Is that a problem too low?
You absolutely can.
Okay.
Some doctors would, it depends on other risk factors. So okay. normal level Got of it. LDL cholesterol, most people should be below 130. Mm-hmm. I would say optimal is below 100. But for some people that have a lot of other risk factors, your doctor might want you to be closer to 70. But okay. we need cholesterol. So the goal yeah. should not be to completely eliminate cholesterol yes. in your body. And it can yes. be too low and impact all of those things that we want cholesterol there to do.
Yes. Okay.
But yeah, keto, carnivore, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Atkins ended up dying from, he crashed his Segway, which led to some complications in the hospital. And he was so blocked, he ended up having a massive heart attack or stroke.
Is that remember. Right? I did not know
That's
that.
That's how he died. Oh my from his own God. Diet.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, with those things, it's not just that you really reduce carbohydrates, but you also, for yeah. keto anyways, and for Atkins, it was eat as much. And kind of, yeah. I guess, for carnivore. I don't even know the rules of carnivore other than just eat animals. I remember the first yeah. time I heard about that was at a conference. And I thought this lady was like out of her mind. It was like 7 years ago. And she was like an all animal diet. And I was like, what? What? Why did they let her in? And
oh my
now it's
God.
Like something that's actually out there.
Oh, yeah. No, I've
got those diets, you know, they reduce your fiber, but they also really increase typically your intake of animal products to an abnormally high level.
Yeah.
That can yeah. really drive up saturated fat to just too high of levels. And some people are very, very sensitive to saturated fat. They can cause the type of cholesterol produced to just stick around for longer. Mm-hmm. And again, thinking mm-hmm. about like common diets, automatically it's cut out a lot of carbs, including good sources of fiber,
right.
and increase protein as much as possible. And there's other ways you can increase protein, but for a lot of people that just means as much animal as you possibly can eat. And in the case of keto and Atkins, you know, that is as much butter, as much cheese, as much sour cream. And those things are absolutely, absolutely fine to have.
Right.
But they do not need to be considered a quote unquote healthy thing with the connotation of adding as much as possible because it's going right. to benefit your health.
Yes.
I certainly don't want to live in a world without ice cream. I still right. eat, you know, all sorts of things yeah. that are high in saturated fat, but it's
right.
being mindful of the fact that my body is also, you know, I have a family history of high cholesterol. My body responds to those and could right. lead to my cholesterol being elevated. So it's right. not that they have to be completely removed. It's just that
right.
you don't necessarily need to go ham on all of those things all
literally.
The time.
Pun intended.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Especially if you've removed the soluble fiber from your diet.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And fiber is so important for hormones and, or blood sugar balance. So there's that too
yeah.
for any PCOS listeners. Amazing. This has been so illuminating. I've learned a ton and I'm so glad that we had this opportunity to sit down and learn from you. Tell us yeah. about your programs. I want to know, you walked us through a little bit what's included, but how do they work? Are they running now? Like how can listeners find you and work with you?
Yeah. So my course is always enrolling. I just had a baby 9 months ago. And I think what's one of the beautiful things about a course is that I
yes.
didn't have to stop helping people
yes.
while I was on maternity leave.
So cool.
So anyone can enroll in the course at any time. The course has three phases. As I mentioned, phase one kind of talks you through all of the what, when, hows, and whys of cholesterol. Mm-hmm. Phase two, we go through each type of food, like each category of food. So we talk about eggs, okay. we talk about meat, we talk about dairy, yeah. fruits and cool. vegetables.
And
like
myths.
Things to focus on within yeah. those categories. We talk about exercise, alcohol, all sorts of stuff.
Cool.
And then phase three is actually putting it all together. So you now have all of this information, but how can you be successful with it? Because if you can't implement the very best diet program in the world, it
right.
doesn't matter.
Yes.
And we are not trying to yo-yo your cholesterol. It's
right.
much better to see a small decrease that you can maintain as opposed
yes.
to very big decrease that you shoot right back up the next
yes.
next month or when you can't do it.
Totally.
In addition to all the content that's there. And I love that online format just because you can pause, rewind, rewatch, re-listen
yes.
as much as you'd like. There's totally. Live support. So we have a community group
cool.
That is
love
super
that.
Active. And then we have
so
live
cool.
monthly calls
awesome.
As well. So I designed the course with all of the content and questions that I have been either getting or creating yeah. over the past years of being in private mm-hmm. practice. So the course is designed to answer all of those questions for you. But I love the Facebook group because I learn about new products all the time in there.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
so
like
amazing.
I've never tried every type of yogurt and I don't have every type of yogurt at my store, but
yeah.
it's really nice to be able to see course holders kind of sharing these recipes totally. That they tried that they really loved, or these products that they tried. And their success stories are also really awesome to put in there.
Yeah. Just to have that support network is honestly, I think I would say it's so important, but I feel like it's vital. Seriously. Like, yeah, the community,
especially if you have other groups, right? There's so yes. There's people in your house that are giving you pushback, because most of us right. don't just feed ourselves. You know, right. We're also navigating preferences yes. of maybe a partner or our kids.
Right. Yeah.
So those mm-hmm. are also like, if you're not getting to support there, because they only mm-hmm. want to eat pizza and chicken or whatever, I don't know.
Right.
They're giving you pushback for making them eat beans. It's like a nice place to be able to vent those and think about ideas to make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, totally. I love that. So cool. Amazing. And do you work one-on-one, or are you just running the programs right now?
Offer one-on-one sessions, but only for people that have gone through the course, because I don't want to spend my 1 hour with people talking about things that are in the course. So if there are really specific things that, they feel like they don't have addressed, or their, situation is a little bit different, then I'm happy to offer one-on-one. But for the most part, like I said, I made that course based on working with hundreds of thousands of people and lowering their cholesterol. And my goal was to answer all of the questions that I really commonly got.
Amazing. Wow, what a great resource. Thank you so much. And let followers, listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram at lower.cholesterol.nutrition. And I'm on TikTok at lower.cholesterol, which is a fun and interesting place to be. I do show up there. Definitely on Instagram, my stories, I share a lot of meal ideas because I do love cooking quite a bit.
So cool. Yes, I do know that about you. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ashley. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Corey.